Network. Ozone Gold is traveling the country with a star-studded roster starting this November 26th here in the City of Champions, premiering the new hit single Baller's Walk from the original sound of Motown, Ozone. Also, check out the exclusive vending opportunities available live and virtually. Both are on sale now at OzoneGoldRadio.com. Check it out.
From the Sunshine State, this is Tampa Bay's 10 Talk.
They had to go down to this state, in that respect, blows. I'm sorry, but it's just, and that is not a level playing field when you're playing the private schools that have access to anything they want. And you got to do fundraisers. So we got your back. We'll do some cool things.
Appreciate it.
Cool things. We'll get ideas from Z-Man and Hunter. Young guy stuff they want to do.
Yeah, let's do it.
We'll do that. All right, my friend.
Hey, thank you.
As always, it's been a pleasure. Fighting Irish and Navy today.
Yeah, no, this will be fun.
We've been knocked off by Navy before.
I'm not
taking anything for granted anymore.
No, they're always tough. You know, they run that triple option. You don't see it very often, so it's tough.
Well, my favorite guys, keep me posted where the playoff game is. I know one of the assistants on James Harrell on Jesuit, he played in the NFL, and he's at the NFL Alumni Association, and he's one of the coaches. Hopefully he don't play Jesuit, but keep me posted on that.
We want to play Jesuit, actually. Let's see who we're made of.
All right. Yeah. Well, and I'll be at the All-Star game.
Oh.
And good luck in your pursuit. Hopefully I'll see you. Good luck in your pursuit of going to the next level and getting to participate. You guys deserve it.
Hey, Mike, thanks for having us.
All right, that's my favorite gang of guys, the Boca Ciega Pirates. And I'll tell you what, they've had a great season. They accomplished their goal. You're listening to the Tampa St. Pete Sports Connection on the Tampa St. Pete Sports Connection Radio Network as we just joined our affiliates. And I want to welcome all the listeners and appreciate them. We got some great breaking news coming in the next couple of weeks on this this network. Things are taking place. But WTAN AM 1340 and 106.1 FM, both those signals you can get loud and proud over the Tampa Bay. And I get 1340 down on the beach and even 106.1 FM. And then WZHR AM 1400, 104.3 FM, WDCF AM 1350 and 102.3 FM. For all you listeners, you're listening to the Tampa St. Pete Sports Connection Radio Network, and we are live from Ferg Sports Bar and Grill down here in the heart of St. Petersburg. If you are in the three-county region and you haven't been down here, it's a must-stop if you're a sports fan. And it's a little brisk today, which is unusual down here. Usually every day down here we have sunshine and have an absolute blast, but we're right across from the Trop. Any college game that you want to watch. I'm getting harassed. Oh, it's my neighbors.
The neighbors are here.
It's the Treasure Island party posse. We got Henry. We've got Eileen, Kenny and the Jets, and Sherry. These are my TI party people.
Hi, guys.
And Brandy Winans just joined us. Hello, young lady.
How are you, sir?
I'm superb. And as I said, we're live from Ferg Sports Bar and Grill. We're going to have Billy McGee on about 1:15. It's Alabama and LSU today doing battle, and not the kind of contest that you typically anticipate. Usually the collegiate game of the year in many cases, but not this year. But Billy's an LSU grad, so we'll let him chime in about his Tigers. And then I want to share a story. You'll like this story. This is our Fergs from the front row. As I mentioned, you can come down here, 95 televisions, every college game. If you want to watch it at Ferg's, we will turn it over to you. And it's well worth the drive if you're up north. Come on down. Central Avenue is absolute on fire these days, eclectic. And there's 31 blocks of nothing but boutiques, bars, restaurants. Just an absolute blast all the way down to the pier. But I'll go over some of the college games, and then Brandy and I'll get reintroduced to each other. I haven't talked for a while because I've been remiss on that topic, dear. I'm sorry.
It's all right. It's been crazy, too.
Oh, my word. Texas A&M, Auburn, that is for the SEC West Division lead. And as I said, a lot of you Florida State fans, not too happy with Jimbo, but he's got it going on. He knocked off Alabama this year. Central Florida, Tulane. You've got Alabama, LSU, as I mentioned. Michigan, Indiana. You got the Michigan watch parties here each and every week. You got Iowa watch parties for you listening in the three-county region. If you're a Hawkeye, if you're an Auburn Tiger, Alabama, Crimson Tide, and Michigan Wolverine, we have watch parties. Come on down, and it's like going back home. You're going to run into people, and it's an absolute blast. And, of course, we just got done with the World Series.
Yes. Unbelievable.
The Atlanta Braves. Now, here, this is a factoid that I thought very interesting. The Atlanta Braves, before the All-Star break, won 44 games. The Braves won 44 games before the All-Star break. After the All-Star break, they won 44 games, Randy. And they won the World Series in week 44 of the year. Hank Aaron, Hammerin' Hank Aaron. There's Billy McGee dressed to the nines.
There's my man.
Hammerin' Hank Aaron was number 44. He passed away last year. So take.
I was going to say, wait 44, a minute. Where,
44.
Did I miss a year?
Yeah, 44, 44, 44, 44. Very, very interesting factoid. So I think Hammer and Hank was looking down on the Atlanta Braves as they won in six games, and I thought that was kind of eerie, isn't it?
Very eerie.
The number 44 in all of those elements of the Braves' success.
Exactly.
All right, so as I said, Michigan, Indiana, Florida, South Carolina, unfortunately for Florida, they're not in the top 25, and actually, the fact that South Carolina and Florida are not in the top 25 in this matchup hasn't happened. There's not one Florida school in the top 25 right now, and there hasn't been for 5 weeks. First time since about 1982.
Has it been since 1982?
That not one team has been in the top 25, and,
wow.
and that's sad. Miami of Florida takes on Georgia Tech, and, of course, Barry Smith, who I am very appreciative of. His son played at Georgia Tech. And Wayne Hogan, who was on last week,
right.
He was assistant AD at Georgia Tech for a period of time. So a lot of Georgia Tech love in the house.
Absolutely.
Those guys won't be pulling for the Miami Hurricane. And then North Carolina, Wake Forest, as I mentioned, North Carolina started the season in the top 10. They were, they right now are 4-4. They started the season number 10. Wake Forest is having one of the best years. Okay, it's hard to stay focused on the scores and conversation with Billy McGee showing up. But North Carolina, Wake Forest. Wake Forest is having a heck of a year. And they've got a quarterback that is potentially a Heisman candidate. And North Carolina, as I said, now 4-4. They've got a very soft defense. That'll be a great game to watch. And then tomorrow, remember, the Bucks have a bye. There's no Bucks watch party. There's a Lightning watch party. And that's tonight, and that's a 7 o'clock puck drop. And one last thing, and then we'll get this conversation going. I have been remiss in covering the Tampa Bay Rowdies, and I apologize. The Rowdies are the professional soccer team. We are going to have a soccer segment. It's going to be a Rowdies report, and we'll start that probably in about a month. And then we're going to have a video channel dedicated to them. Well, they play down at Al Lang Stadium tonight at 7:30, and they call it First Pitch. I was wondering, I'm not a big soccer guy. It's called First Pitch, and that's at 7:30. They take on Tulsa, and it's the quarterfinals for the soccer championship. So looking forward to that. And that's your Fergs from the front row. And on the tee, worldwide technology taking place down in Bermuda. I wish we were there today. Matthew Wolf has a three-stroke lead right now, and that is a very loaded field if you want to watch a little golf today.
Yep.
And in Bermuda, and it looked gorgeous down there. The Champions Tours in Boca Raton, they were supposed to start yesterday, got rained out, obviously. They'll be playing today, and that's my favorite golf to watch because it's the old dudes.
And we had rain yesterday, my goodness. And I'm going to Sebring tomorrow for a couple days for racing and wine. And,
imagine that. You know what? I got in trouble because I called you an alcoholic. I said, you might be an alcoholic. Terry, who you've met, my wing woman, she said, I'd be offended if I was Brandy. I said, she took it in.
It's just in fun.
It's
you
in
know.
Fun.
You
but
know
now
me.
I'm wondering. Here you go again. And Billy, there's a pattern here. You always examine patterns in people. And you go where they got this $500 bourbon, whiskey. You're going to all these bottles of wine are a grand. You know, here's chump change down here at Ferg's trying to get enough money up for a draw in a plastic cup, and you're traveling the world.
But I also have to eat, too, you know? These aren't pleasure trips. These are work trips, baby.
Oh, these are work trips. You can tell everybody that.
We might
that.
Throw a little pleasure in it at the end of the day, but these are work trips.
All right. Well, he's right on time. It is 1:15. I like to be on time. And Billy McGee, it's great to see you again, my friend. I haven't seen you since the week after the Great American Pickleball. We had a conversation, and you look busy, and you look dapper. Dapper Dan, brother.
He looks so handsome, I got to tell you.
You two talk about that later on. This is a sports show.
You know, being on time is something you need to do when you're in the sports business, right?
I'm pretty punctual, Pete. I've always tried to be that way, but how was the drive up from Fort Myers?
Well, you know, when I left, it was 74 degrees, and when I get here, it's like, what, 62? So
was it really 74 down there?
I mean, it's a little 90-100 mile drive up, but it's always great to be back at Ferg's. I got to tell you, thinking back about 9/11, what a great event that was, and having you on board. And to this day, I'm still getting notes from people talking about, can we do it again? And yeah, we'll do it again, but I think we're going to do it a little different next time.
Well, let's talk briefly about that, and then we'll dive into the wide world. The Billy McGee Wide World of Sports. That's what I'm going to call this segment every time you come up. I don't think ABC will come after us for that line, Wide World of Sports, because in your world it actually has been. But that 9/11 event, the 20th anniversary, I got goosebumps like three times that day for what we had done. You know, obviously it was a team, but it was you the inspiration behind it. And talk a little bit about that.
Well, it was interesting because we had tried to put it together the year before in Nashville. And as you know, COVID brought us down and some of the other movements. We then thought about doing it in Orlando. And then we thought about doing it at Hard Rock. And somehow the good Lord kept guiding us and ended up here with Ferg.
It was meant to happen.
It was meant to happen. And I remember the day I first met you and Randy was the very first day Ferg brought everybody together 2 months earlier. And you know, without your support and without the teamwork that everybody put together, I have no doubt the event would not have been as great as it was. But again, it just shows you what a team of good people can do. And most of my life has been about putting good teams together, and success comes with that.
All right. So you sit down here. It's Alabama LSU today. You're born and bred in Louisiana. Let's talk about your upbringing and, I don't need to see that LSU Cup. I think Iowa played them in a couple of Outback Bowls, and we might have got the best of you one time. I believe we did.
Well, you know, it's interesting because there's a lot of synergies between tonight's game with Alabama. I saw that LSU's a 28.5-point underdog, and I'm not sure that's good for anybody that's going to be betting on that because – Coach O on his way out, the guys may have one more for the Gipper, and especially playing Nick Saban, who actually brought LSU its first national championship in, what, 30 years?
Was that 2007?
No, it was 2000, I believe.
2000. Oh, exactly. Yeah, it was 2000. Yep.
And they hadn't had one since the Billy Cannon era in 59.
Billy Cannon. Man, so, that's old school.
You know, growing up in Baton Rouge, I was always going to be an LSU Tiger. I mean, from the time I was a little kid, I remember my dad taking me to the Tiger Stadium in the early 1960s, and you walk into those portholes and you go, I was going to play football there. That was the thing. The only problem was when I decided that I might want to do that, there was a quarterback named Burt Jones.
Number seven.
Number seven, the rusted rifle, threw the ball like
played for the Colts,
like Kurt Warner.
Yep, played for the Colts.
The ball never got 15 feet off the ground. It was like a missile.
It's a missile. I remember that.
And the rest of us threw a ball like Billy Kilmer that would wobble around out there.
I love Billy Kilmer. Had the beer gut. And
he was a New Orleans Saints. After,
I know.
You know,
then he went to Redskins, the
Skins. Washington Redskins. And so growing up there, and I was blessed to be a good tennis player. My dad was a great
tennis
player.
Good. You're extremely good. Who drove you into tennis, your pops?
My dad. My dad was a very, very good player. Played the U.S. Open back in the 30s.
You never shared that with me. Yeah, your father played in the U.S. Open?
Yep. Reached the third or fourth round and played doubles in the Junior Davis Cup with Bobby Riggs, who people know the Billie Jean King, Bobby Riggs story. So I grew up around tennis. My sister played professional tennis as well. And I grew up through the Australian movement that really began the boom of tennis, which
Labor
was the
and those
Labor,
guys.
Rosewall, and Emerson and Newcomb, Staley, and they all came with Harry Hopman. They moved into the United States. And, you know, it's interesting because we'll get all the way over to pickleball, but what's happening in pickleball is really what began happening in the early 60s and into the 70s with tennis.
The invasion of tennis.
It just,
the explosion of tennis.
Everywhere you went, people were carrying tennis rackets. You could be in any airport. They were converting city park, building city park courts everywhere. And then, of course, when television began to bring the game with Connors and Nastasi, and then most people would go, well, McEnroe. But McEnroe came on in the 80s. The boom really began in the early 70s. And
Bjorn Borg and those boys.
Yep. And so I was blessed to be at the right place, right time. I got a scholarship to LSU. We had 4 years of good tennis, and our great coach who recently passed from COVID, Steve Carter, was able my senior year to assemble a group of guys that, you know, LSU had not won a SEC title in tennis, I think, in 30-some years.
You're listening to,
we ended up winning the SEC that in 76.
You're listening to Tampa St. Pete Sports Connection on the Tampa St. Pete Sports Connection radio network. We're live from Ferg Sports Bar and Grill having a conversation. Brandywine is down here with me with Billy McGee. And, you know, you grew up, and you said this, but it was kind of a, it was a little rougher neighborhood in close in the area. Growing up, how tall are you, like 6'4"? How'd you get away from not playing football and basketball and tennis, and it was considered kind of an elitist sport? It's kind of like golf when I grew up on Pollock Hill. You're not golfing or you're getting your, you know what, handed to you. Was there some challenges being a tennis guy when the coaches are walking, watching you walk in the hallways?
Well, the interesting part is most of the high school coaches that I had wanted me to come play football or
That's
baseball
my point.
Or basketball. The problem was my dad said he wanted me to be a tennis player, and him being an ex, I shouldn't say an ex, a former World War II Marine, you know, it wasn't like I was going to
No option deal.
No, yeah, he goes, look, this is what I want you to do.
And you're going to do it.
And you're going to do it, and you're going to be good at it. And, you know,
the great. Was your pops the Great Santini? Did you ever see that movie?
Yeah, I did.
Was your old man the Great Santini?
He just, you know, he was kind of the guy in town in Baton Rouge that ran things. And one of those things, he had his own business. One of those things was the head of the Parks and Recs for many, many years. And they built a lot of tennis courts. And I think that part of that was growing up in a park. You know, you'd go play tennis for 2 hours, and then you go play tackle football over in the field with a bunch of guys. Then you go play baseball. Then you go play basketball. But everybody spent their afternoons and their weekends in the park playing sports. Obviously, we didn't have cell phones, and we didn't have Twitter and Instagram and Facebook. And
well, your age, did you ride your horse over there?
Well, I grew up on a farm, so there were plenty of horses and cows and Brahma bulls. And you're in the 4-H. So basically, you spent your life outside. You spent your life outside.
In the good old days.
But the joy of tennis was that, you know, by the time I got to my senior year at LSU at 76, the pro tennis circuit had begin to get some big corporate sponsors and pick up speed. And so, you know, the decision was, do you leave college and go get a job, or do you go on a journey of trying to play professional tennis?
Not a tough question when you're a young guy,
you're
single.
21 years old. And I'm
easy
thinking,
question to answer.
Exactly. Get in your Camaro, drive to New York City, and
rock and roll, baby.
Say I'm turning pro.
Yeah. No press conference, nothing.
There wasn't anything there. The thing that made it interesting was you don't realize how well you have it in college. You got an athletic dorm. You're being fed three times a day. You have trainers. You have coaches. You got 40,000, 50,000 students that are cheering for you. You got everything being given to you. Then all of a sudden, one day, you're in a little 400 square foot
Billy McGee
apartment.
and me.
Nobody cares.
Billy McGee and me.
And I'm going, where do I get something to eat? They go, well, go down to the local diner here in New York City, and I'm trying to figure out how to get around the damn place.
And you're trying to figure out how to keep gas in your car. and I got some friends of mine. In fact, Zach Johnson, you might remember that name.
Sure.
Yeah, Zach, he's from Iowa, and he talked about the same thing, going from college. And when you're down there on the they've changed the name a million. It's the Corn Ferry Tour now.
Sure.
You're by yourself, and you're slamming your clubs in your trunk when you don't make the cut, and you're not getting a damn dime. That's the world you lived in.
You're living in a van. You're living in the back of a Catalina, and you pull up to the next week's tournament.
Good thing you're a handsome man, because I bet you that when you're meeting the chicks back in those days, it's not too impressive. So where do you live? See that baby right there? You got a couple of sleeping bags in there. Mattress.
They go like, listen, if you lift the hood, the trunk, it comes out like a vampire. You know? You're laying there in your tennis clothes from the day before with your racket alongside you.
Well, obviously, you were successful. You traveled the world. Talk about some of your fondest memories when you were working your way up that ladder. To play professional tennis?
Well, probably the friendships you make start and stand out
lifelong.
The most. Lifelong. I have, because of COVID, I've reconnected with dozens, if not maybe 100 guys that I have not seen maybe since those days, since the 70s and 80s, that, you're laying around day after day going, what am I going to do? Everything's shut down. So you start calling people. And when they answer the phone, they go, oh, no, Billy, we're not. Oh, no. We can't.
I'm busy.
You're still alive. It's like that commercial when they look at the cell phone and go, uh-oh.
Exactly.
But to my surprise, only a handful had passed away. And, when you're in your mid-60s, you're going, I'm still young. But
the reality is people are leaving. Not shocked when you lose people. I guess that's our age right now, unfortunately. That's just the reality of life.
But the friends, the opportunity to see the world, because my dad, when he gave me a tennis racket, he handed it to me and he says, this is your handshake to the world. Little did I know what he meant at that time.
That's a great line.
That racket took me around the world. I got to see and enjoy a lot of different cultures, a lot of different people, a lot of different locations. And I got to do it when I was very young. I mean, you're 21, 22, 23 years old, and you're roaming around planet Earth, and you're getting up every day, hitting a tennis ball that you love doing. What a better life than that, until the reality comes that you're poor, you can't get to the next tournament unless you hitchhike, and you maybe should go get a job.
Hey, when the memoirs come out, will it be PG, R, or X rated? The memoirs of your life on the road.
Well, much like Andre Agassi's book, which, by the way, I was fortunate to give Andre his first check as a pro. It's going to have a little of all.
There you go.
It'll have a little of all.
That's the variety of life as you evolve over the decades, correct? Now I'm G. G for grandpa. I wish I could last longer at night. Yeah, yeah.
Well, the other part of that is I had several... Well, I should say one specific young lady I've known for quite a long time. She's a big Alabama fan who tonight will be crying in her beer. But she told me, she goes, you've gotten so much nicer as you've gotten older. I go, what does that mean? She goes, I knew you 25 years ago when you were a tyrant. God.
I can't see. Well, I can't,
that's why they continue.
I could see you being very direct, and that's probably how you rose. Let's start that process. So you did some promoting in the world of tennis that you knew very well. Talk about some of those things and some of the people that you put together, some of the events.
Interestingly, when I quit playing, I was trying to figure out what to do. I went to try and work for my dad's furniture company, which...
Not your deal.
I was in charge. Can you imagine me? I'm in charge of repossessions. That didn't work out so well.
Nothing got repoed.
So I'm reading one day in 1981 a tennis magazine where exhibition tennis was going to be the thing to come, like a rock concert tour. And so a friend of mine helped me get back in touch with Jimmy Connors, And Connors goes, I'll do an exhibition with you, but who am I going to play? I said, I'm going to have you play Bjorn Borg. He goes, well, if you get Borg, I'll do it. And I said, well, what do you want? And he told me. And obviously, I'll tell you the number. For him, it for the one-night match was six figures and up. And same with Bjorn and a private jet and whatever. And I got like $5,000. But I'm going, you know what? I'm going to do this. And most
No problem. That's what guys like you and I say. I got this.
So we did Connors Borg in 83. And to my surprise, the day before my match, Borg announced his retirement. So, of course, I got bombarded with people like Curry Kirkpatrick from Sports Illustrated. They write up a big article. Sports Channel shows up. And after the event, I went, you know, this is something I could be really good at because I kind of know what I'm doing, but I really didn't. But then a lot of people started calling me, and one of them happened to be a gentleman in Orlando, Florida, that was the founder of Holiday Inn. And I ended up meeting him, and he was building a timeshare resort, which today is one of the largest in the world, called Orange Lake. And he loved tennis. Built 16 courts and an 8,000-seat stadium, and he basically gave that to me and said, move to Orlando, here's your stadium, you can do what you want. So I began to put more and more of the top players together, Lindell, Vilander.
All from that venue?
I was doing it at that venue,
cool.
But I was also moving around. And in 85 was the first time I decided to get involved with charities. And John Walsh, who has America's Most Wanted.
Yep.
John Walsh.
Was he looking for you?
His son had been killed.
Oh, yeah, that was when that.
And they were starting the Adam Walsh Child Resource Center. So I got Connors and Lindell together. And
That's my executive producer now for my wife. Flew him in.
The Connors and Lindell helped us raise quite a bit of money for John Walsh and the Adam Walsh Child Resource Centers, which everything evolved into what is today, I guess, the Amber Alert. It was able to make it so that if you had a child that was missing, you could report it right away, as opposed to before, you'd have to wait 24 or 48 hours. So all of that went along. I ended up with, 2 years later, Chris Everett's final match in Atlanta with Martina Navratilova, which, by the way, the celebrity doubles match that night, I had Santa Claus play with Chris Everett, which happened to be Mike Leach, the NCAA singles champion. And then Martina's partner was Hank Aaron.
Seriously, I just told the Hank Aaron story.
I heard you say that. Yeah. I told Hank, I said, we were in the Omni Arena at that time, which today they tore down as the Phillips Arena.
And I met your buddy. Is it Bob?
Yes, yeah. Bob Williams, president of the Hawks.
Yeah, exactly.
So I said to Hank, the first serve that Santa Claus hits you, and we were doing this at Christmas, I said, put it in the rafters. And he hit that tennis ball on the top of the arena. So that was, he gave me a ball. I to this day have it. What a wonderful man. So that kind of continued the exhibition side of the world of tennis. I had an academy going in Florida. And then I decided I would do something which I regret in the tennis world. I ended up buying the women's world doubles out of Japan and moved it to the United States. Had all the great women players, but people just didn't come.
The women's side of it wasn't being embraced?
Well, it was amazing because you had Martina and Pam Shriver and Chris Evert. You would think they would come, but they just didn't draw well.
It's almost like the WNBA, unfortunately.
Well,
they got great athletes
in a way,
and they don't draw.
And by the way, the tennis was magnificent, and it was great to watch, but we just didn't draw the crowds. And so this was in 89, right around 89, 90, and I'm thinking, I don't know if I want to do tennis anymore. And then your great friend appeared at my doorstep via the good Lord, Jim Foster.
Jim Foster, the founder of Arena Football.
And he came to Orlando with two reasons. One, he was trying to sell franchises for the Arena Football League. And he also wanted to meet the founder of Holiday Inn because he was looking for a sponsorship from Holiday Inn for the teams. Well, of course, I'm working with him. So the Citrus Bowl committee, who I was part of, said, go see me. And I sat down with Jim, and he showed me what they were doing. And I said,
what year was this?
1990.
Okay, gotcha. Okay.
And so I go, Arena Football, and it goes to the heart of pickleball. I'm looking at this video going, this thing's going to be huge. And I'm saying that to people while the USFL is still in its existence. the there was another league. I can't remember what it was called. It wasn't the USFL. It was the wasn't the XFL. It was just like the United Football League. And you had the Tampa Bay Bandits. You had the New Jersey Generals, owned by Donald Trump, that Herschel Walker went to.
Oh, yeah.
And all of that was going on.
Young played in the L.A. Express. But
because Jim Foster had been with the NFL, he had drawn that map out of Madison Square Garden of an arena football game. So long story short, I went to a group of guys, and they bought the rights to what became the Orlando Predators. And so I came on board with my sports marketing company and sports promotion company to work in that space, knowing very little about it. But it only took a couple of months, and I went, oh, I got this. This thing is going to be huge. So we created the Jungle, which became one of the most famous places to play in the Arena Football League.
The venues in the Arena Football, we know we had the Barn in Iowa. I started working with Jim Foster in 1997. What was this, a Thunderdome over here?
This was, yeah, Thunderdome, which is Tropicana Field.
Yeah, now, every one of them had their own little
Well, it began because we named the Jungle, and it was only because I was driving to work about, I guess, a month before the arena season kicked off, and I was trying to figure out what we could do to draw people, because you had this other outdoor football going on and the regular NFL, and that song from Guns N' Roses comes on. And I said, you know what, if we turn this arena dark, the Orlando Arena was a great place.
That was ahead of your time, brother, because everybody stole that.
Well, and the interesting part was I knew a guy that had worked with I used to go to a lot of concerts, and I got to know a lot of the guys. He was doing the laser shows for Pink Floyd. So Mark Grega, God rest his soul, he came in, and we did the opening night with Welcome to the Jungle, with lasers, with pyros, and one of the girls that I worked with at the time, her brother was Special Forces. He goes, dude, I can rappel. So the rappellers began part of it, the fireworks, the lasers, the jungle was born, and the people came by the thousands.
People loved the Arena Football League for the entertainment value of it. And I remember Foster was sitting down having breakfast in Des Moines one time, and we're laying it out. I'm going to do the program for him. He's got all these. I'm thinking, man, these things are crazy in terms of reaching them from an entertainment perspective. And in the barn, he got the same environment. What it wasn't as nice a joint as yours was, obviously, in Orlando, but it had its own mystique because you were in Iowa.
Well, then you can duplicate it. That's one thing I said to Jim. So the next year, the ownership group in Orlando bought New Orleans. So I went home to the Superdome, and we had the New Orleans night. And again, we created the show in the Superdome, this monstrosity of a building. We took up 15,000 seats in the corner, fireworks shooting across the arena, lasers, and we named that Thunderdome inside Superdome. And it was quite interesting how that went along, but the cost of paying for the Superdome just wasn't feasible. I went back to Orlando, and lo and behold, thinking maybe I'll do something with the Predators, whatever, Bob Grease, who you met, owns Grease Investment Funds, his family owned the Cleveland Browns, based here in Tampa. He had the Tampa Bay Storm. Now, the Storm and the Predators obviously didn't like each other, but Bob called me and said, would you come work with me? And so I drove from Orlando for about 6 months every day until I moved to Tampa, and we set up. Bob was playing in Tropicana Field next door. And interestingly enough, the first person I called on to have a sponsorship for the Storm was Mark Ferguson. Here at his little gas station, and that is
29 years ago.
29 years ago.
You need to be here on November 24th.
He already called me.
Yeah. For the bash.
So I became friends with Mark Ferguson 29 years ago, and he sponsored the Tampa Bay Storm. In those days, we had...
What did he give you, some wings coupons?
Yeah, wings, coupons, and letters to tell other people what a great job he was doing for us. You know, that's Ferg.
That, like he likes to say, back in those days where the beer was warm and the food was cold.
But let me tell you, the crowds we drew, 25, 28,000 to see arena football, was due to the fact that the Buccaneers at that time were not that good. The Lightning had just been born into the fairgrounds. And we had Tropicana Field to ourselves, and the Tampa Bay Storm would win championship after championship. So I stayed on board with the Storm for 3 years. Bob had sold it to Woody Kern. I stayed on to 95 when we won the Arena Bowl here in Tropicana Field. But along that journey, something interesting happened in 93. We went in to play Orlando at Orlando in the Jungle. And a lot of the people were very vocal about me having led that team now over across the bay in Tampa, you know, here in Tampa. And not to my surprise, fights broke out, and I was in fights, Bob was in fight, the players were in fights, everything. I came back to Tampa Bay knowing
WWE, baby.
Knowing that we were gonna play Orlando here, and I jotted down and created a newspaper ad that said 90 miles of hardened concrete lie between Mickey Mouse and the city on the bay. The war on I-4 is now on. And the war on I-4 to this day is still being used, I think, for colleges much more than those things.
But, USF and UCF.
Yep. So some of these slogans like wall-to-wall brawl and war on I-4 and 50-yard indoor war, they're all still part of what was the lore of that.
You're listening to the Tampa St. Pete Sports Connection right here on the Tampa St. Pete Sports Connection radio network. And we're live from Ferg Sports Bar and Grill, if I could speak. Conversation. We have Brandi Winans here. I'm going to turn the mic over to her in a minute. And Billy McGee in the wide world of sports and his interesting life. So, you know, my buddy Jim Foster, when he founded that sport, when he came up with the idea, and we sat down at that breakfast, I remember thinking, you should have stayed in the NFL. He was in an NFL front office, and then he makes his decision. But his passion was unbelievable. And
Well, it's infectious because he caught it.
Well,
and so does
you're both infectious people, and can convince people to get behind your passion. But Jim, everybody at that point felt so bad for him when they proposed that they wanted the benefit packages that the NFL players were getting, and everything that just pretty much decimated what I think would have been the AAA farm system, the NFL eventually.
It would have been. And
it was.
And it really was.
It was.
When I left Tampa Bay, I went to Nashville with an ownership group there that was a great ownership group. And we began to institute a lot of new things. Major hospitals were getting involved, medical centers. We had our own training facility, spent millions of dollars to build those training facilities. The medical platforms for the players were getting better. The benefits were getting better. But then some of the larger money began to come in. NFL owners were buying in. Bon Jovi was buying in. And obviously the
players... Did Elway buy in too?
Elway bought in.
Yeah, I thought so.
And obviously the players saw the money coming. And so, of course, then the unions were formed. And
greed.
Yeah, and I think probably the last... I would think for my arena football career, which extended on after Nashville... That may have been that in Tampa Bay may have been the greatest time, but Nashville was a situation where the city was being reborn. It's, you know, a long way from where it is today, being reborn, new real estate, real development, a new arena. The Titans were coming, and the people were ready for something. And when we gave them the shows that we had here in Orlando and Tampa that I brought there, we had the best dance team headed up by a gal named Brandi Jo Sutherland.
Imagine Brandi dancing. Imagine that.
Just unbelievable.
Did she like to drink too?
She did that. But some of the best teams, promotions, everything was coming together, and I think that may have been the height. Kurt Warner was on the move. Jay Gruden was on the move.
I was right in the middle of it then, and it was an absolute blast.
It was rocking, and I think as it got a little farther along, even though I left there and went into Atlanta and went into Charlotte, went into Raleigh with teams, it was interesting that I had been working in Tropicana Field with the Tampa Bay Storm when the Tampa Bay Lightning moved into Tropicana Field. And we shared offices, all of us interconnected. We had a championship team. They were playing, I think this was 93 or 95. I can't remember what year that was, but... It was interesting that I would crisscross with the Lightning and all that they were doing, but I never looked at the Lightning as something that I was going to be a part of.
Tennis and hockey, I just don't see. I don't see the marriage.
I thought they said sake.
Yeah.
You know? I thought we were going for a drink.
Yeah, yeah. Well, no, that's Phil Esposito's line.
Well, yeah, that is true. And, you know, it said it was written up in I guess Sports Illustrated. Is that when he talked with the Japanese?
Yeah.
But as the story went, as you know, I left Tampa, went to Nashville, and went from Nashville back to Tampa to be with the Lightning, and all of that I really believe God's guiding you some way, somehow, to your final destination of whatever you're doing. And people ask me, what did you know about hockey? Well, when you're hired as the president of a corporation and you know sports, you may not know that specific sport, but you know the mechanisms.
It's a widget.
Need to be put in place.
You know, to plug and play.
And I've always been a big believer that, you know, you're only going to have as much success as the people you surround yourself with. But when you take over a situation that's been decimated, a lot of hard decisions are made and a lot of movement is made. What complicates that is an ownership that I'll say is not stable. It wasn't stable.
So you come in and you're essentially the hatchet man?
Well, I don't know if it was so much a hatchet man as more of
that's how
just
you get viewed.
You know, just trying to figure out, you know, a lot of organizations, when they take over something, they just get rid of everybody. They call it a new broom sweeps clean. In my case, I was trying to maintain as much of the platform that was there.
Continuity.
Yeah, but the problem was when you're in last place and you're broke and you don't have a winning attitude, a lot has to change. The good news is that the founder of the sport in Tampa Bay, Phil Esposito, was able to get the sport here and through his and Tony's lifetime have gotten to see 3 Stanley Cups, which is pretty amazing in the short matter of years they've been here.
Growing up, would you have thought hockey in Florida? You grew up here. It
never,
makes no sense.
Never.
And the Florida Panthers are solid, and you got the Tampa Bay Lightning. You're like, it just doesn't add up, man.
But I will tell you an interesting throwback. In the 70s, when I moved to New York, I would go by Madison Square Garden all the time, and I'd go, I want to play tennis in Madison Square Garden, which I never did. Only the top 8 in the world got to play there, and I was thinking at that time, I'm going to be that, and I'm going to play in Madison Square Garden. 20 years later, I'm standing on center ice with LeCavalier to my left and Gretzky to my right, and I'm saying, God, you're really funny on how you get me to Madison
Square Garden.
You got
me here. Thank you.
I mean, I'm standing in center ice, Madison Square Garden, going, look at this. This is amazing. So part of the book, part of my book, part of the journey has been that 6 degrees. You don't know what you're doing today, how it's going to come around. I didn't know in Tropicana Field in 95 when I left to go take Nashville, I'd be back 2 years later to be with the Lightning.
Well, that's an incredible story. All right, let's now fast forward to Billy McGee's world of pickleball, and I'll let Brandy, who has been very involved in it since, you know that day that you met Brandy?
Yes.
We didn't crash your lunch. You guys crashed our little lunch and meeting. I want that clarified.
Well, then we'll let Brandy clarify that.
No, it's true. He and I were meeting down here for the St. Pete Sports Connection and getting some things underway. And he goes, I got to finish up here by 2:00 because I got another meeting to go to. And I said, okay. So we were running behind. And then the next thing I know, we're over there. You guys are coming in to the other side of the restaurant here. And the next thing he said, well, yeah, why don't you just sit in on it too?
Well, you know, it's interesting because when Ferg told me, he goes, I have a couple of people I want to introduce you to. As soon as I met the two of you, I said to Mark after me, I said, what do you think the chances are they'll work with us on this? And he goes, I think they'd be glad to work, especially with the connection of arena football and yours with the NFL.
Yeah.
And I will tell you again, without what you two did, I don't think there was any way we could have pulled off what we did on 9/11. But it was spectacular, so thank you both.
It was an awesome day. The weather was beautiful. We couldn't have asked for a better day. And it's always fun what goes on behind the scenes before an event. And, you know, it was one of those things where anything could go wrong, did go wrong. But you know what? Billy McGee frickin' pulled it off. And it was a team effort.
It's something we'll remember the rest of our lives.
Absolutely.
You know, and everybody that saw it and was a part of it and viewed it and helped contribute to it, it was a great thing. Which leads me back to talking about pickleball, what we started with.
Yeah.
I up until 2000 and early 2019, I was really focused for that previous 5 years on building some top tennis juniors down at the Racquet Club in Fort Myers. But there were two old hard courts in the back that I asked my sister, should we resurface them to get some hard courts, these clay courts, whatever. She looked right at me and goes, pickleball. And I go, what about pickleball? She goes, it's coming and you should take a look at it. I took her word. I drove around Florida for about 2 months. I'd go to these different little places and they, like, people were playing and I'm going, wow, this is pretty interesting. And I knew about the U.S. Open, which is an enormous event in Naples. But it wasn't until a Sunday morning where I went into Inglewood and there was a park that I'd been invited to a tournament to come watch by two ladies I knew that were in the volleyball space who had now gone over to pickleball to run pickleball tournaments. 480 players, every size, shape, age, 16 pickleball courts on 8 tennis courts, and I looked at that and went, I haven't seen this since racquetball in the early 70s when everybody was out there playing. And the two things I took away from that morning was anybody can play the sport in a matter of day, if not hours, days. Number two, you're having the time of your life socializing, getting to meet new people, having fun. So I began to look at it as a health and wellness sport. I went, look, get people out. Get people a paddle in their hands, get them out playing, and get them out socializing. Then I went, you know, maybe we should start our juniors teaching them great eye-hand coordination with this thing, because it is easier for the little kids to put a pickleball paddle in their hand. So now you're going to see the schools, the elementary schools, what I'm working on is the high schools and even college teams starting to have pickleball teams. The other is that I noticed early on that everybody was getting into, you know, building a pickleball facility or retrofitting a pickleball facility or a tournament.
Yeah.
And I went, what do I do best? I do special events from my years as tennis. And so I went, we'll do a special event and we'll match that with charities. So that's really the direction I'm going. Maybe 4 to 5 times a year, we're going to try and put on different parts of the country big Billy McGee's Wild World of Pickleball events that support, I don't care if it's American Heart Association, American Lung, the American Cancer, Missing Children, whatever it is, that we can work with those charities, because there is no doubt in my mind now that this sport has the ability to actually be larger than tennis was. And when you think of tennis at its height, I think we were 70 million, maybe more, 50 million, 60 million.
Yeah.
This sport can go nuclear.
I played this sport in the 70s in California, in Santa Monica, Venice, and Beverly Hills. I moved back here. No one knew what the heck I was talking about. And when I started to see it's spreading across the country, and then just like at the Villages, and so, you know, the day that we did the 9/11 tournament, we were trying to get Bob McDonald and a few other key pro players over here, besides the beautiful pro players that you brought out. But he was doing another major tournament over there
in Orlando,
Orlando.
At the USTA Center.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's going to be an Olympic sport.
Well, you know, I've been blessed because right where I am, the first two people that I, well, three people I met, I knew Ryan Sherry, who was one of the pros that played for many, many years. He played college tennis at Florida. And he introduced me to Kyle Yates and his mother. And so through Julie Scott and Kyle, I was introduced to the Ben Johns and the Tyson McGuffins and Simone Jardines and Chad Edwards and all of the different individuals that have come to know me. And I just decided, people go, why'd you put your name on it? I said, because I know I'm going to do it right, and I want to have the responsibility. If something goes wrong, you know you can call me. It's not some corporation, some brand. It is just pick up a phone, call Billy McGee, and I'll see if I can fix it for you.
And you did it right. You did it right, and I'm excited to see what you're going to be doing in some of the other cities across the country, because I think you're going to do a great job and bring into some charities like you did with Randy Sutton and his group.
Well, in the Wounded Blue, I think we'll continue to go down that road. What I want to close with is something you and I ask about, we had talked about earlier.
Yeah, we got a few minutes. I got to do the close, so we got a few to finish up. How about it?
You know, I've been an entrepreneur all of my life.
Really?
And even when I was working for, of all the sports teams that I've worked for, which are, I think, eight, I've never been farther away than working directly for the owner. And you think of all the people that have to work their way up through the layers to get there, and I don't really know how that worked the way it did, but I've been fortunate that didn't matter if it was arena football, the NHL, I always worked at the top. But I also always tried to make sure that my job, having that opportunity, was to lift everybody else up or to push them up. It's one thing you see with Tom Brady. He's always pulling the team up.
Sign of a very good leader. That's the reality.
And so a lot of the young people ask me, how do I get into pro sport? I tell them all the time, go become an intern. Start by donating your time and get in there. And what I would say to the sports teams is one thing that I did was I never pigeonholed them. I went, I want you to move from department to department to department, because five of the former interns that I had in the different sports teams are now presidents of, one of them, Daryl Harbin, are presidents of organizations or corporations, because they had a taste of a lot of different departments that they worked in. So it basically gives you an opportunity instead of going, I went into work as an intern in the ticketing department, I stayed there the whole, work eight departments. See if
exactly.
You can move. So you get a broad education.
I did that when I was with the Iowa Cubs. I was in charge of all the interns. And the job they really didn't like, I made them be cubby for several afternoons in the heat when they were the mascot. But then they had to touch everything.
And the most important thing is when you say to someone, I'll do anything, make sure you understand what that means.
Because everything.
It means everything. And I don't care if it's sweeping the floor, cleaning the bathrooms, taking the laundry out. You got to do what you got to do. And even the girls that have been part of our dance teams, they had to do promotions, they had to sell tickets, they had to go to cheerleading practice, dance team practice, drive 200 miles, whatever it was, they did.
Well, Billy, I certainly appreciate you taking time to drive up here from Fort Myers. I'm certain that you and I will be doing plenty of projects the rest of our days on the planet.
Yes, sir.
But now it's important. We've got to – what's the point spread? If I take Alabama, how many do I have to give you? Because Nick Saban, that 28.5 is scary. Nick Saban said today on College Game Day, he said, don't look at this game like what LSU has done this year. Look at the rivalry, the passion, and as you said, Coach O walking out the door.
Well, anybody that's played in the SEC, and you can play in a lot of conferences, but you know, we went in as even college tennis went into Georgia with 10,000 fans, Florida 5,000. It didn't matter because that day, that moment in time, it is just me and you. And don't care about the spread. We don't care about anything but just beating you.
So
I'm not going to tell you that spread.
Little friendly one, wager.
1 point.
Oh, but you're out of your mind. I guarantee if you call Daryl right now in Orlando, he's taking that bet.
He will take it.
Did he go to Alabama too or just work there?
He worked for Nick Saban there, but he played, I think, at Arkansas State. But he grew
He told me that.
He grew up in Alabama. And by the way, he was one of, in Nashville, one of my very first interns. And look how great his life's
been. And now he's part of our Hoovy team. We'll talk about that next week. I'll bring Roger Warren over.
From the Sunshine State, this is Tampa Bay's 10 Talk.